It is the State Capitol Report on the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Glad you could be here as we're in conversation with Wisconsin's new Secretary of State, Sarah Godlewski, appointed by Governor Tony Evers to replace Doug La Follette for the remainder of a four-year term. La Follette served in the role for over 40 years and abruptly resigned 1 month ago. Call in with your questions and comments, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Secretary of State Sarah Godlewski, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hello, Kate. It's great to be here on this wintry Monday morning.
Indeed. And, you know, your predecessor, Doug La Follette, held the office for 44 years. Let's start out with, how do you intend to distinguish yourself in this new role?
I'm now looking at my third week, Kate, and a lot of my time has been spending with staff, understanding all the different things that the office has been doing for the people of Wisconsin, and calling different clerks and different individuals, because to me, it's what can this office do better, and how can we best serve the people of Wisconsin? And so I think there's a lot of things that you'll be seeing more from me and the Office of the Secretary of State as we move forward. But this has really been a few weeks of me onboarding and getting acquainted with everything that the Secretary of State has been doing for the people of Wisconsin.
In his resignation letter, Doug La Follette criticized the Evers administration for a lack of resources and a lack of staffing in the office. Will you be able to accomplish things with your budget?
Well, there's no doubt about it that since 2015, the Secretary of State's budget was significantly cut. And when you look at why the budget was cut in 2015, it's really frustrating because it was all political. Doug decided not to sign Act 10, just kind of jogging people's memory. That was way back when there was an act to stop collective bargaining for unions across our state. And as a result of him not signing that act, there was retribution against him. And they took away almost all of his employees and significantly cut his budget. And I think what's so frustrating about all of this is that the Secretary of State doesn't use tax dollars. It's an office that pays for itself because of the services that they are able to provide businesses and citizens here in Wisconsin. And so one of the things that we will continue to work hard on is making sure that we have a budget that is properly resourced for all the work that the Secretary of State does.
What are some of the services we may not realize that come from this office?
So one of the things, Kate, is authentications. And what authentications are is you bring in any sort of documents, whether you're a business or a citizen, that you want to be recognized by a foreign country. We are the only entity here in the state of Wisconsin that can sign that document, i.e. authenticate it, so it's recognized by a foreign country overseas. So just last week, this is a really good example. There is a creamery here in Wisconsin that wants to start selling cheese in Central America. And so we were the ones that authenticated their documents to say, yes, this is a legitimate business. Yes, this has actually been, you know, approved by the FDA. So then they could go and actually sell their cheese. We had another citizen actually come in who was a Vietnam vet, and he wanted his marriage to be recognized in Singapore. And so we were the ones that looked at the marriage license, said, yes, this is a legitimate marriage license. We sealed that document so then it could be recognized overseas. We do almost over 14,000 authentications every year. And this is whether they're, you know, Wisconsinites in Superior, Wausau, to important businesses here in Wisconsin, like Trek or Harley Davidson. And so this is just one of the many examples of the important work, because we are the only entity in the entire state that can do this.
talking with Wisconsin's newly appointed Secretary of State, Sarah Godlewski. You can join the conversation with your questions and comments at 800-642-1234. Let's turn to elections. In 37 states, the Secretary of State is involved to some extent in the administration of elections. In 1974, Wisconsin's Secretary of State stopped having a role in elections, and some Republicans have proposed shifting some oversights to this office. What are your thoughts?
I believe the Wisconsin Election Commission, which is the organization right now that has been running our elections, it's a bipartisan organization. And it's been doing important election work freely, fairly, and securely for a long time. And so in my mind, I don't think that we need to change that. But I do think that there is a role that the Secretary of State can play with strengthening our democracy. We have a unique relationship, for example, with clerks. And so how can we start working with clerks and building, for example, our transparency, whether it's maybe live streaming a canvas that's happening or publishing ballots. I also think that we could be working on initiatives that increase access to the ballot. Depending on what organization or entity you're looking at, Wisconsin is consistently rated one of the hardest states to vote in. And we know what is critical to our democracy, making sure everybody can have their voice be heard. And so what are ways that we can work and build public-private partnerships and helping people make sure that they can vote or get to where they need to cast their ballot? And Kate, this is something that I'm used to doing and I've done before as state treasurer. We created a public-private partnership with homeownership and started an organization called Take Root Wisconsin that's now helping Wisconsinites buy, fix, and stay in their homes. And so I think it's this kind of creative, out-of-the-box ideas where we can really work on what's critical and what we also know is really fragile here in Wisconsin, which is our democracy.
So you see yourself as a partner to the work that the Wisconsin Elections Commission does. You could see yourself and your office lifting up their work?
I think, of course, lifting up their work. And democracy has many different aspects of it. And so, as I mentioned, whether that is working with clerks to helping to improve access to the ballot, I believe these are important ways that we can be thinking through how to help with democracy and really continue to strengthen it here in our state.
Sarah Godlewski is the new Wisconsin Secretary of State, previously won election as state treasurer. Call in with what's on your mind and questions you want to field to the Secretary of State. The number to call is 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. This is a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.
If it's happening in Wisconsin, it matters to you. Stay up to date on all the top news stories from around the state with WPR's new weekday morning podcast, Wisconsin Today. Subscribe and listen wherever you get your podcasts or at WPR.org/Wisconsin Today.
It is a State Capitol Report on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Governor Tony Evers appointed Sarah Godlewski to be Wisconsin Secretary of State 1 month ago, filling the vacancy created with Doug LaFollette's retirement. The governor tweeted at the time, Godlewski is only the third woman to hold the office in our state's history. Call in with your questions, your comments for the Secretary of State, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. I want to turn for a moment to state treasurer. Governor Evers cited your experience as state treasurer as a qualification for serving as Secretary of State. How does serving as the state's chief financial officer prepare you for this position? I think we're having some trouble here hearing Sarah Godlewski, and we're just going to try to... Sarah, are you there?
Hello.
Hi. Can you hear us?
I can, Kate. Now I can hear you.
Great. Well, I just want to reiterate just a bit and backtrack Governor Evers citing your experience as state treasurer as a qualification for this role. What do you see as some crossover between your role as state treasurer and now as Secretary of State?
For starters, I believe that you've got to be scrappy and creative in this role, because we've seen how they continue to cut resources for these critical executive offices. That's where I stepped up, and we did a treasurer's task force, and through that work identified how property taxes when I was treasurer was a really important issue, and developed this public-private partnership with organizations to create Take Root Wisconsin that's helping people buy, fix, and stay in their homes. I think it's also about thinking through how we can make sure we're as effective and efficient as possible. Even prior to my time as state treasurer, I was involved in, and I was a consultant and a project manager for the Pentagon for almost a decade, and helped save taxpayers millions of dollars. And a lot of that was looking at process improvement work, for example. And so what are ways that the Secretary of State can modernize to the 21st century using technology? So these are, I think, just a few things that this office can be doing. And look, I'm the daughter of two public school teachers, and service is really important. It's why I was honored that the governor even asked me to step up and take this role, was to have an opportunity to serve again Wisconsinites. And so my top priority is going to make sure that we are doing everything we can to best serve the people of Wisconsin.
There is the Republican-backed resolution in the legislature that is urging Governor Evers to hold a special election for Secretary of State. And, you know, this comes as La Follette's election opponent and other Republicans have characterized the resignation and your appointment as premeditated and as, quote, political cronyism. What is your response?
So the governor has the ability to appoint when a constitutional officer vacates. And the people of Wisconsin clearly elected Governor Evers, and he's upholding his constitutional abilities in doing that. That's what the people of Wisconsin elected him to do. But look, when I talk to Wisconsinites, there's one thing that's really clear, is that they're just sick of the conspiracy theories. They want somebody that will put their head down and get to work. And in the last 3 weeks that I've been in this office, that's exactly what I've been doing. Whether it's been electing to, now I'm elected to chair a $1.4 billion trust fund that helps fund our public schools. And we're already thinking of creative ways to help continue to increase our distributions to public schools, to making sure that we're modernizing the office and how we can be leveraging online services. So somebody from Superior, when they want to get a paper authenticated, doesn't have to drive all the way to Madison or use snail mail. We can use technology to meet people where they are. And so to me, this is exactly what the people of Wisconsin want. They want somebody who's going to think day in and day out about how to best serve them. And that's exactly what I'm going to continue to do.
What is your staffing like in your office?
So we have a senior administrator that helps collect and process all of those authentications. And then we have an executive assistant, so who's calling and making sure businesses, for example, have gotten what they need for these authentications. Or you know, another role that we do, Kate, is we countersign all acts of the governor. Which makes sense, because if you look at the Constitution, we're third in line when you think about a succession plan. And we on Friday countersigned a state of emergency that the governor issued about forest fires with all that warm weather that we had, and it was super dry. People were really worried about fires going throughout the state. And so we signed all of these documents. We're also the state's chief librarian, and we make sure that there are fair records that are being held for the legislature and the governor. And so my small but mighty team is doing all of this. But look, I think at the end of the day, this just goes back to how can we be innovative and creative to not only juggling all of these responsibilities with a small team, but making sure that we are going above and beyond and thinking through the work that we're doing.
Talking with Wisconsin's newly appointed Secretary of State, Sarah Godlewski. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234 with your comments, your questions, your ideas for the office. Let's go to Brian in Brussels. Hi, Brian. Go ahead.
Well, thank you. Hey, we talked about the need for advancing and protecting democracy, but I think a major tenet of democracy is that the people get to decide who their elected officials are. And if elected officials use the power of their office to get other elects or themselves reelected, then that is actually harming democracy. And I see the efforts to get out the vote, either to increase the number of people voting or the types of people voting, as a threat to democracy. And it's spoken to here as if it's to advance democracy. And I wonder your opinions with regard to that.
Secretary of State, go ahead.
And Brian, you and I agree that politicians should not be running our elections. That's very clear. And Wisconsin right now has a system where politicians are not running our elections. We have the Wisconsin Election Commission, which is a bipartisan organization that's led by a civil servant to ensure safe and secure elections that we've been seeing for years now in our state. And I believe that that needs to 100% continue. And so you and I agree that the Wisconsin Election Commission and a bipartisan organization is who should be doing our elections, and they're doing a great job, and they should continue to be doing so.
If a special election would be held for Secretary of State for this position, would you run?
Absolutely. I would absolutely run if a special election was held. But the question that we are all seeing is, what does the Constitution of Wisconsin say? And the governor has the ability to appoint, and Governor Evers upheld that.
Let's turn to additional work here. You'll continue to serve on the Board of Commissioners of Public Lands. How do you describe the work of that board to Wisconsinites?
The Board of Commissioners of Public Lands, otherwise called the BCPL for short, is really a gem for the state. It's the oldest agency in the state of Wisconsin. And one of the key aspects of this office is we manage a $1.4 billion trust fund. And the money that trust fund produces supports our public schools. In addition to, there are almost 80,000 acres of public land, and a few other kind of interesting aspects of this agency. But by far, I believe the most important one is the distributions it provides public schools. And when I actually chaired this organization when I was treasurer, we saw record-breaking distributions every year, and even provided a special distribution when COVID hit, so our schools could help address the digital divide, provide hotspots or e-learning books. And so I'm really looking forward to getting back at the helm and leading the organization in creative ways as we continue to help to support our public schools, because they need all the resources they can get to set our kids up for long-term success.
I want to land here on the political action committee you formed last fall, Women Win Wisconsin. You supported the successful election of Janet Protasiewicz to the state Supreme Court. Which legal questions do you want the court's new liberal majority to tackle?
I hope there's two questions that the court start looking at. The first one is, as a person now in Wisconsin that has fewer rights than my mother and my grandmother, I want to be able to make my own medical decisions, not politicians. But yet, when Roe v. Wade was overturned, Wisconsin embraced an 1849 abortion ban that now requires basically politicians to be making these healthcare choices. And it's ridiculous. And I think it's having a huge impact on our state, and it's affecting women's lives. So to me, that is a critical question about the 1849 abortion ban and what role government has in women's abilities to make those choices. I think the second thing, Kate, I would say is we need to address fair maps. In our state, even though in 2022, we saw, for example, that Democrats took a majority of votes, we only won 34% of the legislature. And our districts look more like letters of the alphabet than actual districts. And that's not one person, one vote, which is what our system is built on.
Secretary of State Sarah Gadlewski, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
This is a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report on the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We meet two members of a new coalition aiming to fast-track Wisconsin's clean energy goals. Governor Tony Evers wants to see net zero in greenhouse gas emissions by 2050. That's a target with dramatic implications to our state's economy. Call in with questions about the clean energy economy and what is possible. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Alex Butts is executive director of the Environmental Justice and Infrastructure Initiative for the Walnut Way Conservation Corporation. Welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you for having me here today.
Good morning. And do I have your name right? Antonio Midorsky or is Alex Midorsky?
I think we flipped the first names. I'm Alex. Yeah.
I think the
that's I'm Antonio, but
yes, hi, Antonio. Alex, but, oh my goodness, I'm so sorry. Alex Midorsky is associate director of government relations at the Nature Conservancy in Wisconsin. Alex, welcome.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Well, I want to start with you, Alex. Why form this new coalition? What's behind it?
I think behind this coalition is a real urgency among people to grow our state's clean energy economy, to combat climate change, get to that 2050 net zero goal, and to keep jobs and grow jobs in the state of Wisconsin. We don't have coal to dig here in the state, nor do we have gas to drill for. So if we want to create and grow jobs, really our choice, the only choice and the one that is good for the sake of conservation, is to grow those jobs. And the bigger tent we have to do that, the more effective we're going to be in accomplishing those goals.
Antonio, this was founded by 12 or so organizations. How did this come together? How did this coalition figure out that they needed each other and decide that, you know, we're going to do something collectively?
Yeah, across the state, we know that there are environmental justice and climate change and sustainability stakeholders who have been doing this work for decades. And now that we're coming to this point where there's a tremendous amount of possibility with these most recent legislative wins, this is a big opportunity for us all to come together. And it's really about, like Alex was leaning into, people first, and recognizing, you know, that we have unique circumstances across the states in various targeted areas, but we all sort of comfortably fall under that sustainability umbrella where we can find some commonalities to work towards together so that we can achieve our sustainability goals for the state of Wisconsin. It's one of those things where, you know, we don't have to choose between the environment or good jobs or economics. we have to protect the environment and address climate change and create jobs. We have to do all of these things at the same time. And this is why this group has come together.
Alex, what is the commitment like for member organizations? What do you expect of coalition members?
What we expect of one another is productive work on a number of the pillars we've established as common goals, whether that be environmental justice, whether that be thriving landscapes through things like smart siting and natural climate solutions. These are goals that we've all united around and everything we can agree on. It's not easy with a coalition this large to really form solidly and coherently around a set of principles. But thanks to our commitment to one another, I believe we've been able to do that.
What happens when you have disagreements? I mean, you know, what happens when you're not on the same page and have a single vision?
So I think one great thing about this coalition is we've got a lot of different committees and working groups to discuss when we do have disagreements and to really work through things based on scientific data and based on really the art of the possible, what we think can be accomplished politically and what we think is best in terms of mitigating carbon releases in this state. So it has been a congenial and convivial process, but when there are different perspectives, we work through those very well.
Antonio, you know, how does that feel when there are naturally going to be competing interests because all of these organizations come from different perspectives?
Well, this is our big opportunity to sort of all row in the same direction. Again, back to Alex's point, because primarily we know that our North Star is around these sustainability goals, not only in our local communities, in the state, the country, quite frankly, across the globe. So we've come into this, all of us, with some very clear values around diversity, inclusiveness, willingness to listen. And we all know that this work only moves as fast as, you know, the speed of trust. And so a lot of spaces have been created so that we can have the dialogue, continue to prioritize our issues, and basically find some shared meaning around things, again, to that point about commonality, so that we could create the critical mass to continue to move these efforts forward, again, around our sustainability goals.
Talking about this new statewide Clean Economy Coalition of Wisconsin with Antonio Butts and Alex Madorsky, you can join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Tom in Whitewater. Tom, what would you like to bring up?
Thanks for having me. I just wanted to comment on something that may be a little bit more of a national thing. Over the weekend, the Biden administration talked about their push for electric cars by a certain deadline fairly soon. And one of the things I haven't heard discussed as part of that discussion is how people are going to afford it. Right now, we have such a massive problem with income inequality that most Americans can't afford to go buy a car as it is. And these electric cars are going to be extremely expensive. And no one has explained how that piece of this is going to work. I support it, but there's got to be some economic issues addressed to make this work for most Americans.
Tom, thanks for that question. Antonio, you first.
Yeah, not necessarily a silver bullet or just the answer to your question, but we know that in the Inflation Reduction Act, there are incentives for the purchase of electric vehicles, a certain amount for new vehicles, a certain amount for used vehicles. But you lift up a very, very important part of this work. And I think what was being alluded to sort of in the previous comments that we were making, and it's how do we prioritize and really prioritize based on the experiences that individuals and families are having, you know, in their communities economically. And so that's a big part of the work. And back to that point that we have to move all of these things at the same time, but we do have to create spaces to sort of unpack these big trade-offs that we have to make in terms of the sequence of events, because we know it all has to happen. But the question is when and how does it happen and how is that being done in an equitable and a diverse way?
Alex, what comes up for you as you look at these target goals and then you also consider what is realistic, what is equitable when it comes to even EVs or anything else that will reduce emissions?
I think it's a great question, and I'd like to echo Antonio as well as Tom. If we want to meet 2050 climate goals with things like electric vehicles, we have to make sure that those vehicles are going to be accessible to working class folks as well as charging stations. Right now, as Tom pointed out, for a lot of people, it's difficult to afford the idea of investing in even a used carbon-based vehicle. And then electric vehicles can be more. So we need to explore incentives like those included in the Inflation Reduction Act and invest in these technologies, because the more we do so, the more people will be able to afford them, and we can amp up that access in an equitable way.
Turning to Wisconsin here, Governor Evers creating the state's first clean energy plan. It has 71 immediate actions. Where do you suggest starting with these recommendations from the coalition's perspective? Antonio, what do you see? Antonio, can you hear us? Alex?
Yep, absolutely.
Okay, yeah, on the mute. All right, go ahead.
Deal with this. So absolutely, with us having to move all of these various topics, you know, all at the same time, you know, prioritizing will be basically an ongoing process. And so the work is honestly process over product. But specific to what the governor has laid out and all of the stakeholders have contributed to, I think that these questions, in some sense, will be answered from a geographical perspective. So some things will move at the same time. I don't necessarily want to go into any specific areas, but more so talk about this process and this work where we'll be able to lift up what's important based on those various issues to geographic locations, and help the local stakeholders and municipalities in those areas really get targeted about the solutions coming out of their community that align with the governor's long-term goals.
Okay, so geographic important there. Alex, what surfaces for you as what the coalition can move on with these with the clean energy plan and these 71 actions?
I think the strength of this coalition lies in all of the different areas of expertise the members bring to the table. Antonio's knowledge, for example, and work experience on environmental justice has really informed my views. The Nature Conservancy, among other things, is bringing knowledge on natural climate solutions and thriving landscapes, sustainable forestry and agriculture. Each member has something to bring to the table, and there's a lot that's possible if we have the appropriate ambition.
We're at the intersection of environmental and economic policy changes in our state. Alex Modorsky and Antonio Butts, they're members of the new Clean Economy Coalition of Wisconsin. Join in with questions and comments about clean energy, 800-642-1234. It's the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report on the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. In the transition to clean energy and Wisconsin achieving net zero emissions by 2050, we meet two members of the new statewide Clean Economy Coalition of Wisconsin. Antonio Butts and Alex Modorsky are here. Call in with questions and comments about the economic impacts of climate change. What's ahead for our state? 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Mark in Dodgeville. Mark, hi. What's on your mind?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I really support the goals. I hope we get there sooner. But I have a great concern when we put up large transmission lines from west of us that will bring in questionable energy. Figures are available from the Energy Information Administration, EIA.gov, that show those states west of us produce about half from coal, only about a quarter from wind, and almost nothing from solar. And the wind energy, being small facilities, generally gets used locally. So we seem to be getting half coal and a lot less than a quarter wind, not very green energy. The Public Service Commission professional staff recommended against the last line, the Badger Coulee, and the line they're currently building, Cardinal Hickory Creek. But in both cases, the political appointees, the three commissioners, approved those lines, and they have some huge entanglements with the energy industry. My concern is that transmission lines will keep old coal plants alive a lot longer, will bring in a lot of coal energy to us, even if we don't see the coal burning here in this state. And, of course, they don't create local jobs either.
Mark, thank you.
I wonder what you have to say about that.
Yes, Mark, thank you so much. Alex Modorsky, go ahead.
Yeah, I think that when we think about things like siting transmission lines, it is important to consider the impact on species, habitats, as well as local communities. And it's one reason why we really do need to ramp up the state domestic supply of wind and solar. It helps alleviate some of the concerns that Mark expressed. We also know that retiring coal plants and things in that vein can be a powerful tool for mitigating climate. You know, specific transmission lines, the coalition doesn't have a position on, but I think that those are certainly things we need to take into account. And as Mark said, the sooner we can get to net zero, the better.
Antonio, how can our state attract and support renewable energy projects for communities, especially communities that have been overlooked or have been underserved?
Yeah, and connecting it to the previous question, I think this goes right back to these targeted solutions that as we move forward, eventually fully align across the state. I think the big thing or big opportunity here is increased civic engagement across the state, especially in communities that haven't been heard from in terms of initiatives that are going to impact the infrastructure in their communities. And so what becomes important is, do we all know who the Public Service Commission is? Do we all understand the public proceedings process? And how do we increase, you know, outreach and education on the civic aspect of our participation in how decisions get made as it relates to our environment, to our infrastructure? And so that's the big work in terms of how do we raise up the visibility and awareness of these issues and the unintended consequences of the choices that we're making, so that individuals and families can have a line of sight, and also that we can create these pathways and these spaces for those voices to be heard and contribute to how the decisions that are being made. So in short, you know, we have to share in shaping these decisions with everybody who's impacted by the decisions that are being made. And again, I think that goes back to, again, what are the targeted concerns from a geographical standpoint and how those things line up with the bigger, larger issues, like in this case, transmission lines.
What do you envision the coalition's work for racial and economic environmental justice, and how do you see it lining up with what the state wants to create, which is an environmental justice office?
Yeah, that's huge, and that's a major accomplishment in this work. And as we know from the Inflation Reduction Act, there's a huge amount of resources that are being targeted on environmental justice going into local communities across the country. And so as a core partner in the Clean Economy Coalition, a big part of our work is EJII, the Environmental Justice and Infrastructure Initiative. And so we're roughly a little over a year in, and what we've done is established a base of grassroots, smaller community-based organizations to, again, build increased civic participation and awareness around environmental justice issues. But we're connecting those groups to groups across the state who have similar issues who are working through similar municipal processes to lift up their concerns and have their issues addressed. So our work is cross-disciplinary. It's bringing folks together from across a variety of sectors. And where we show up is in, you know, a lot of different environmental justice situations. And it depends in terms of, and what we do depends on what's needed by the partner in terms of addressing that individual or group, small group issue. How it aligns with the state is, again, we all have these common goals around climate mitigation and state sustainability. Mm-hmm. And this is our big opportunity, again, to be able to integrate into a space that hasn't had a lot of diverse participation, and then learn from those groups, share with those groups, and row in the same direction towards our goals. So again, we acknowledge that there are a lot of competing priorities and that there will be a lot of trade-offs. But the coalition, the Clean Economy Coalition, has made a really clear intentional value decision around being very inclusive in this and taking the time to really understand the individual circumstances across the state and make sure that informs the decisions that are being made as we move the work forward, whether we're dealing with government or whether we're dealing at the state level, government at the municipal level, but then all of the stakeholders around the work, corporate, CBOs, individuals, and families.
Permeates economy and government everywhere. Antonio Butts with us, Alex Madorsky, as we talk about the state's clean energy goals and the Clean Economy Coalition of Wisconsin. Let's go to John in Boaz. John, hi.
Good morning. I have an answer for net zero. Because of my engineering background, I took out a pencil and paper and I figured out that we can go net zero today because the existing coal plants can be converted to high temperature wood, and wood will burn 4,000 BTUs per cord. Now, all we need to do is charge up our cell phones and charge up our batteries for our cars. Using steam power, I have a generator that can produce.
And John, we're short on time, and I want to get a response from Alex here. John, very concerned about seeing a transition away from coal and what your coalition envisions.
Sure. So I can't purport to be an engineer, but I will say that sustainable forestry, whether we talk about a natural carbon sink or different technologies that are coming along, like biochar products, are certainly a big part of the solution to the climate crisis in this state. The Clean Economy Coalition is certainly cognizant of the fact that the North Woods has huge untapped potential for mitigating carbon, and whether it's through things like increasing incomes to farmers and rural prosperity, looking at how to do that kind of carbon farming, it's a solution. I don't think we'll get there today or in one day, but it is part of the picture, so I am glad that John brought it up.
Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you so much for having us, Kate.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Antonio Butts is executive director of the Walnut Way Conservation Corporation, a nonprofit in Milwaukee. And Alex Madorsky is associate director of government relations at the Nature Conservancy in Wisconsin, both part of the Clean Economy Coalition of Wisconsin. This is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.